Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering 2 shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
On this episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly, the Winter Olympics are over, but before Sports Illustrated senior writer Stephanie Apstein left Beijing, she reported a rather amusing story. Stephanie spoke to a whole host of Winter Olympians with one surprising thing in common: how much they really hate being cold. And later, Emma Bocellari is a staff writer for Sports Illustrated who covers Major League Baseball. She's also a fan of the Sex and the City reboot. And while MLB is still mired in a lockout, the show And Just Like That took Emma down an entertaining baseball rabbit hole that prompted her to solve an unexpected mystery. But first, Katie Nolan is a TV personality who just finished covering the Olympics for NBC and Peacock. Katie joins me for a wide-ranging conversation that includes the Russian figure skating doping controversy, how we talk about athletes when they struggle with mental health issues, how she recently came to my rescue on Twitter, and what's next for her career. It's February 23rd. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. From Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio, this is Sports Illustrated Weekly. She was previously with Fox Sports and ESPN. She's a self-described TV lady, fresh off covering the Winter Olympics for NBC and Peacock. Katie Nolan, welcome to Sports Illustrated Weekly.
Hi, thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
You did a lot of things for NBC and Peacock for the Olympics, and you cut this really fun promo ahead of the women's figure skating competition where you tweeted, "I heard you can fail a drug test and still compete, so I really thought this sport was for me," which zing, Katie Nolan.
Thank you.
But you actually went figure skating, and I want people to go and check this out. It's on your Twitter feed. But as a little tease, how would you describe your performance?
Certainly breathtaking.
Brave.
Brave, I would say hard-hitting, impactful. These are all good adjectives. Yeah, I stink. And to pull the curtain back even further here, to drop the fifth wall, if there was one, some bedrooms have those little extra walls. Mine does.
Sure.
I had told my producer that I had played hockey until I was 5 years old. He told Ashley Wagner, bronze medal winning figure skater, that I had been playing hockey since I was 5 years old. Now, that seems different. Like one small preposition, but it is a big one in this case. And so she came into it like, all right, I'm going to teach her how to do like a Lutz. She could probably do like a single. And then she saw me step on the ice like a baby deer. Like, honestly, I looked down and I was like, are my skate guards on? And she was like, no, they're not. Why can't you stand up? And I was like, this is a good question. So she taught me like a baby. And look, I tried to be a good sport about it. There's a lot of—
You were a good sport about it.
There's a lot of laughing to cover crying, because I've found that if you laugh really hard and tears are streaming down your face, people will feel more comfortable than if you just are crying.
Are you okay? Oh, that's so hard. Figure skating. You guys should tune in to watch it tonight. It's in prime time. It's gonna look—
thank you so much.
It's gonna look a lot better than this. Yeah. Don't try it. Just watch it.
I laughed, not at your expense, with you.
Good.
In your defense, it's very hard. Like, my wife took me one time. She used to be a figure skater.
Shout out
to
your wife. Just big, big old shout out to your wife.
Shout out to her. She was excellent as a figure skater. She still is. But
I'm gonna start calling her Sweet Lipinski.
I like this.
Yeah.
You could get away with that. I don't think she'd let me.
Don't you do that. Yeah. You're on thin ice as it is.
Nice. Zing again. So we went one time for this show that we used to do back in Philly. And I thought, you know, how hard could it be? And as it turns out, it's extremely hard.
Incredibly hard. The hardest thing I think about figure skating that people don't realize is the mental component, about how, like, you're supposed to smile the whole time and act like this is the best. And, like, you know, they always say these two look like they're in love. And then figure skaters will say, like, yeah, that's the point. We're like actors. If you screw up in the Olympics, especially in a pairs event, like you fall out of your first jump and you know that your Olympic dream and your partner's Olympic dream now might be dead because you fell on your very first jump, you still have to smile and pretend to be in love with this person who all you want to do is go, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. Like, it happened in the Olympics and I kept watching the close-ups to see if the woman was whispering in the man's ear like, sorry, 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 while they're doing their lifts, because that's what I would do. I'd be like, I know, I'm the worst, I'm the worst, I'm the worst.
So I'm glad that you brought up the performative aspect of it in the scrutiny, because the women's figure skating controversy that sort of enveloped the Olympics, because there was a positive test for the Russian skater, Kamila Valieva, who had taken some heart medication and they let her compete anyway. And she finished fourth and the cameras were all over her and she's crying her eyes out. And Katie, she's 15 years old. And our colleague, Stephanie Epstein, wrote a really excellent piece for SI.com about this, where she said the adults basically failed her. And, you know, Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski tried to point out that she was 15, but they were pretty critical of her. And whatever she did or didn't do in terms of doping is one thing, but she's 15 and we're all watching this thing and we're all scrutinizing her and her life is turned upside down for all the world to see and critique. And it just felt like so much.
Well, so look, a part of it is that we're starting to see the humanity of athletes. And so it gets a little, as somebody who started doing this a couple years ago when this became my job, it gets a little dicey when you start to look around and be like, well, now wait a second, 15 and all the world is looking at her and she's not even really in control of the decisions being made. And there's all this pressure and what happens to her if she's not. We start looking at it that way instead of being like, well, she's here to figure skate. Did she figure skate? Did she do figure skating good? Boo. Yay. That's what sports is equipped. That's the—
yeah.
Somebody once pointed out to me that the only conversation sports media was originally equipped to have is like boo and yay. And once that happened, it was like, oh, that's why it's so hard to get into the nuance, because we all attach so much of our identity to our team and then feel like we just have to be like, win or lose, win or lose. Like, we hate when there's a tie. Point is, back to this 15-year-old girl, she's already competing under this cloud of confusion, because the country that is next to her name on your television screen is not Russia. It's ROC, which is the Russian Olympic Committee, which is this weird loophole that nobody understands and nobody really thinks is that much of a punishment. But yes, at the heart of it, you have a 15-year-old girl who most likely is not the one who was like, you know what? I think will really give me the edge if I take medication that will thin my blood and whatever it does. I don't know if that's what it does. If you're a doctor, don't cancel me.
I don't think that's how it works. I don't think so either.
But again, I'm not a scientist. And so I stay out of that stuff.
Me either.
But she's 15 and there's all this scrutiny. Look, I know you said Tara and Johnny, we loved them for their snark. So we were asking
for sure.
Snark artists to walk through a minefield. And I think they did a great job given what we know about them and how difficult this is to talk about. They could have, I think we can both agree, messed that up a lot. But the other thing that was really helpful is that Johnny speaks Russian, which I didn't know. Shout out to him for that. And afterwards, he was able to translate in real time that her coach wasn't saying. When she got off the ice, her coach went over to her and was talking to her. And Johnny was like, she's saying, why did you mess up like that? Why did you give up? You gave up on it. You gave up in the middle, which is even another wild layer.
Madness.
Like you said, the adults around this girl have completely failed her. And it's that. And it's the fact that they don't see it that way. They don't see it as a failure. They see her as the failure. And
which
so
is
while
crazy.
That's sad and disheartening, and if you hear that and it hurts your feelings, that's good. That's a good thing, because that means you know that that's not the way that it should be, which means that you have to keep saying that and speaking up for that. Otherwise, it can turn into that.
Again, I can't imagine how tough this has been on Camila. And it makes me angry that the adults around her weren't able to make better decisions and guide her and be there for her, because she's the one now dealing with the consequences, and she's just 15, and that's not fair.
And here's hoping that there is someone to put their arms around that young woman.
You're right that as a sports consuming public, and then also for what we do professionally, we're much better equipped to do yay and boo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, this is a much more complicated situation. And it's not even just that she's 15 and that's where we stumble. All of the mental health situation is hard for us to discuss and process. Yeah. And we saw that at the Olympics too with Michaela Schifrin, who was one of the best skiers in the world, who was a heavy favorite in several races. She did not finish on three of those races. And it was like this brutal case of the yips where you could tell it was really impacting her. And her post-race interviews, Katie, were so heartbreaking. I want to play for you what she said after the third race that she failed to finish.
I don't know. I wasn't going to try to get to the finish today and like slide my way down to the finish. I wanted to ski just a good run of slalom. And I don't know. I feel like a joke.
That's heartbreaking. I mean, it went on for 5 minutes, Katie, and she was just like clearly working through some stuff. And on the one hand, I think this is good because we need to talk about these conversations more about how people are struggling with mental health things. On the other hand, I felt awful watching it for that long because she was breaking down in front of us, and like it felt voyeuristic and gross, and I didn't know what to do about it.
Can I make you feel better about it? Can I counterpoint
Please.
That? Because Michaela Schifrin, I know the Olympics did not go the way that she wanted. If you're not familiar with her, she's like known as the greatest skier. She's incredibly dominant. Gorgeous, smart. She's just like made for Olympic stardom. And she was potentially going for 5 gold medals, I think. It may have ended up being 6 that she tried for and obviously didn't get. It's not the Olympics she wanted, but she gained a lifelong fan in me. Because after I watched her first race, I went into it stupid, of course, as I go into most things. And I went into it like, oh, this is Michaela Schifrin. I was excited to see her ski because I was like, this is going to be the star of our Olympics. I want to see her start. You know, she's going to start racking them in. So we're going to watch this first race. And she skied out after, I want to say, the 6th gate. She skied out very early. And everybody was kind of just like, what?
Yeah.
What? And then I see them go down to, they're like, we have Michaela Schifrin live. And we were in a conference room and I was like, everybody shut up and turn it up. Because I'm like, what the hell do you say after that? That to me is the most interesting moment where I'm like, let's see. And what she had to say was like, so honest. The clip you played is from the third time, but the very first time, what I noticed is she starts out trying to do the like, well, you know, and it's, I don't know, maybe it's something about the fact that her face was mostly covered and all you see are her eyes, but I just could feel her being like, try to answer this properly.
I think I just slipped. I mean,
and then finally she goes,
makes me second guess, like, the last 15 years, everything I thought I knew about my own skiing and slalom, and I feel really bad.
And she was being very honest, and I was like, damn, I appreciated that so much.
Yeah.
So while, yes, it's heartbreaking, and yes, you're worried about people's mental health, I would say these are struggles that athletes have always dealt with. They've just dealt with them silently. Or they've been told that discussing them makes them appear weak, and therefore, whatever that feeling is, they have to shove that down. And as we've seen, when you shove something down, it usually doesn't go away, right? Mass is neither created nor destroyed. That's science. It pops back up.
And you said you're not a scientist.
Exactly. Like, I'm a scientist in a practical way. Where it helps me, osmosis. So it's just like we're now hearing them discuss it, which I think means that we're going to get better at processing it. And I also know it means we're going to get a generation of athletes who like came up on Michaela Schifrin and they watched. Yeah. So her falling short in this Olympics is just a chapter. She's not so old that we're not going to see her again. She has time. And the sooner she can see it that way, the sooner she can realize where it's all life is knowing where you're at right now. So you know where you can go next instead of going, where did I think I was going to be? And how do I make sure I get back there? It's like, well, you can't, but you can go forward to the next thing. And talking about your mental health is part of that process. Everyone should be in therapy.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. And I think you're right that this is a positive development because now we're getting more athletes to talk about it. The part where you said we need to be better at processing it is interesting and important because it reminds me of what was going on with Ben Simmons. And Mike Golic Jr. had tweeted that the Ben Simmons mental health discussion is not something we're equipped for as a general sports watching public, which I thought was right. I thought it was a pretty obvious point.
Not even that hot of a take.
Not a hot take at all, right? I think as a Philadelphian, which I'm contractually obligated to mention every time that I talk about anything.
I forget.
I always say, like, with Ben Simmons, by all means, criticize him for what he did or did not do on the court. But with the mental health stuff, let's like maybe all fall back a little bit and try to understand what he's going through rather than questioning it. Again, not that hot a take. Oh boy, Katie. Apparently it was because everybody came for me and Mike Golic on Twitter. And a surprising development, evidently Twitter is not a place for nuance.
I had heard that it was, so that's very surprising to me.
Unusual.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how we have these conversations about these difficult topics when we spend so much of our time, both professionally and personally, in a space like Twitter that like does not allow for this.
Well, I mean, I think that first of all, the hardest thing, which is always the case, is that even though you're right, even though, John, you are correct that these are nuanced conversations that are very important, it is also correct that Twitter doesn't do well with nuance. And so if you're going to want to have those conversations on Twitter, you have to walk into it with even more patience than you normally approach that website with. And I'll tell you, that's not easy. So it's one of those things that we can say over and over, it's a conversation we need to be having. But it doesn't mean that just having it and having it wrong is beneficial, because having it wrong is actually more harmful or could cause more harm than having it right. Just when you feel the urge to say something about something, just in case, read first. Right before you tweet, read something. I do this most times. I spell check things and fact check my own tweets before I tweet them, just because I'd be mortified if I got something wrong. And it's I hate that feeling in your stomach when you send a tweet and someone's like, you told on yourself, and you're like, oh no, wait, the hell? And so just like use the information available to you, because we get caught in these things of like, if I don't say anything, something's going to think that I don't care. And it's like, yeah, but you do care. So who cares what that person thinks? Just care properly, read about it, inform yourself. And then the most valuable thing on Twitter that everyone says, never read your app replies, never get in your mentions. I think the most valuable thing on Twitter is you can have a conversation with someone and you can just be honest. Like, I took a lot of heat too for that retweeting Mike Golic Jr.'s tweet, which is like, yell at Mike Golic Jr., which I don't want you to do. I love him. But I retweeted someone's tweet and then people started coming at me and I'm like, you're going to tell me that this isn't because you think this is the easier argument to win, but it's not, because I will reply to you and I will kill you with my honesty and my sweetness. I will tell you that I love you and that this is just my opinion, and I will disarm you because I'm not here to hurt anybody. And it takes a lot to do that on Twitter, but it is, you know, the least I can do as somebody who just plays video games all day and works a couple times a month.
Well, you have a lot going on, but you bring something up here that I want to stop you on and discuss with you, because you're talking about Twitter in a way that, like, this is not how I would imagine most people use Twitter where you're saying, you know, be patient and read first and check your stuff and whatnot. Nobody's doing that, just you. But when you talk about the mentions component, where you will get into your mentions and talk to people, that's interesting to me because you're high profile and you have a lot of people who do come for you and say crazy stuff. And there's sort of two schools of thought on that. One is don't feed the animals, stay out of your mentions, don't engage. I'm generally in that camp. And the other is to engage with people. And you do that a fair amount. Recently, my wife, you do it a lot. And sometimes you do it on behalf of other people. My wife and I escorted her to NFL honors.
Oh my God. Can we just stop and talk about the dress?
She looked amazing.
I mean, I haven't stopped thinking about it since. At night, it creeps into my mind of like, remember when Colleen Wolf just absolutely destroyed the red carpet? She just ethered it by showing up in a dress that, like, I wanted to marry her in that. She looked perfect.
You have made a friend for life because of all that. She will love to hear this. But she did. She looked amazing. And I escorted her on the red carpet. And she tweeted out a photo of us and our friend Lakeisha. And whenever I'm in a photo with Colleen, invariably, like 90% of the replies are, you picked your coverage.
Always.
Which, fine. I've been hearing that forever. It's not clever, but whatever.
You should name your website that.
But I dismiss it. But then there's a percentage of people that are like aggressive about things. Mm. And I let those go too because I feel like they're not worth engaging. You, however, did not let it go. You came into my mentions to defend me in that space. And I'm just wondering, like, one, what prompted you to do that? But also just your general approach with, you don't ignore these people. You get in there.
Yeah. All right. First question is why I did that.
Oh, and thank you, by the way.
Yeah, no problem. You're welcome. I was waiting for it. No, the reason that I did that for you and the reason that I do it for a lot of people is because I've been that person who wants to defend myself. And I've also seen people dig themselves holes by just rabidly defending themselves on the internet, like go down this world where they just can't be wrong. And then it just turns into a thing where everybody judges them. So sometimes when I see something that's easily defended and usually with a joke, if I can see an opportunity to make like a point that makes somebody either go, ooh, or laugh and go, oh, she's got a point, I'll do that because then you don't have to do that. Somebody with a blue check, which what does it matter? But like somebody that seems to appear to be a person has come in and defended you. I guess I'm white knighting you, but what mostly is just like, it's me scratching the itch that I want to, which is defending myself, but doing it on behalf of someone else. It's kind of like charity work, if you will, with the only skill that I have, which is like dunking on people on the internet. As for my approach to Twitter, I want to preface this by saying, and I'm sure you'll edit this part out so it just makes the take hotter. I've been on this website for a very long time. Yeah. I learned about this website in college. I remember learning about it in digital journalism class. And he was like, this is going to be the next best thing. He tried to explain hashtags to us. And we were like, what the hell is this stupid website? But we had to make a Twitter account for class. Mine was KNolan4. Because that was my Hofstra email at the time.
And oh, okay. I thought that there were three other K. Nolans.
No, it was just like a number. It was like, I'm never going to use this website. So let me just use my Hofstra email because it's a Hofstra thing. Amazing. I have to do. But then my friends and I started getting into like, oh, it's kind of fun. And then once your brain starts using Twitter, you start having Twitter-sized thoughts. But so I had that Twitter account and then I started a blog and I switched KNolan4 to the name of my blog. And then it became Katie Nolan, which it is today. So it's the same account. I've had it this whole time. And I've said this before, I shouldn't admit it, but I've probably read in my lifetime of my career, 85% of my mentions. There's been days I've taken off because it's been like, these are bad today. I said something mean about a man on a team liked by angry people. And so I'm going to just the day I said anything about Greg Hardy, I was like, cool. First day off of Twitter in a while.
But this is what I mean. Like you have a big following and
My philosophy.
Yeah.
Let me tell you where I'm at right now. And this will change by next week. So it's useless. But all right, I can tell you is where I'm at right now. I came to a place over the pandemic where I was like, just assume, and this isn't true, but it helps my frame of mind. Assume everyone on this website is trying to joke around with you the way they would with their family. Even when they say something mean, they're saying something to you. And I mean, this is excluding the people that I just flat out ignore. Anyone who says anything about like how I'm not hot or how I'm so hot or how they want to see pictures of my feet or how like my teeth are bad. Like those people, I'm just like bored with them. I'm like, you're hack. None of this is interesting. I scroll right past them. That's a type of desensitized I don't wish on anyone else, but it is where I'm at. Those don't bother me anymore because they can't touch me, because they're not why I'm here. I'm not here so that somebody will find me attractive. I'm here because I like to make people laugh and teach them stuff. But when somebody says something mean, I just assume they're not as good at saying things as somebody who's been using this website for as long as I have. So maybe they meant this nicely. And so joke back with them and see what happens. And when I joke back with them, they're usually like, damn, you got a good sense of humor. And then boom, the whole thing is squashed. And then I can say, here's why I didn't like the thing you said. And they go, I could see it that way. And then a little tiny bit of progress has been made. And I can pretend that some good was put into the world. You just got to remember that people are people and not everyone's out there trying to hurt you. A lot of people are. They don't deserve your time. But sometimes people are just clunky. Humans are clunky as hell.
That's very true. I still think that you're using Twitter in a way that like almost nobody is using Twitter. You're
and
blowing my mind. That,
I don't
like,
recommend it.
You're fixing Twitter in a way that nobody else could possibly pull it off.
It helped me. And if it doesn't help you, and my God, there are people who have life experiences that I can't relate to. There are people who are getting active harassment. This is not, I'm not talking to you. Please don't think that I think somebody threatening to attack you, you should take as a joke. Those people don't deserve your time of day. I think you should block whoever makes you uncomfortable. And if they go, oh my God, she can't handle it, she blocked me. They are the ones that are sensitive. They're the ones that care that they've been blocked. You just don't want to listen to them. That's self-care.
I am probably going to continue to ignore them, but I will call you in as needed.
Yeah, just tag me in if you
to
need
come
anything.
In off the top row. Yeah. We've used up way too much of your off day because it's your first
off day.
It's my
fault. It's my fault. I'm talking too much.
But before we let you go, what's next?
Oh, good question. A really good question. I don't have an answer. I've been pretty honest. Things ended at ESPN and I kind of felt it was important for me to have some time off to sort of recenter, because that the hamster wheel of sports media is, you get kind of caught in it and it starts to feel like the only thing that matters. And it was defining me as a person. And I kind of stepped back and, you know, had a minor mental breakdown that luckily I had a boyfriend here to help me with. But after that, the clarity was kind of like, what if I just live for a little? I've been very, very lucky. Yeah, I don't have to worry about like right now making more money to continue to live. And so much of life now is that for so many people. Yeah. So I know I'm lucky and blessed and I'm grateful. And it feels selfish for me to be like, well, then let me hustle and make more. It's like, let me just chill for a little, play video games, hang out with my dog, hang out with my cool boyfriend, go on the road with him every now and then because I love what he does and I love watching him do it. He's a stand-up comedian. He's the funniest man on earth. And then there were a couple of days where I was like, damn, your career's over. You fizzled out. You don't have it. It's done. You're done. They were right. And then, you know, you kind of deal with that and try to, you know, process it. Then the Olympics happened. I had so much fun doing that job.
It looked like you did.
And I'm so glad to hear that because I was having an absolute blast. And now I think it's given me a little bit of, you know, okay, so you like doing that. So now what? And so I've told my agents that they can't call me for the rest of the week because I want to chill out from the stressful.
Good for you.
You guys don't understand. The Olympics don't take the weekends off, okay? They keep going.
Nope.
And so you got to keep working. And when you haven't worked in a while, it's a shock to the system. So I told them not to contact me for a week, but apparently there are things to discuss. I don't know what they are. I don't know what's next. I know I love doing this and I want to keep doing it differently, just because like, why do it the same? So I don't know what's next, but I think I finally know for sure that I'm not done. So something's next and I'll let you know when I know.
It's okay not to know what's next. It's great and sounds very healthy that you're taking some time for you to enjoy the dog and the boyfriend and the video games and the whole bit. But I wanted to say that it was so awesome to see you back out there. Like you have so many people who love watching you and hearing you. And I'm one of them. Like, going back to Garbage Time, which I thought was a brilliant show.
Oh, thank you. Like, don't make me cry.
No, seriously, because I did a much worse version and dumber version of that in Philly. And like, we used to watch your show all the time for ideas. And like, just to see you back out there having a good time and enjoying yourself, like, I'm really glad to hear that you're not done. And we're excited to see what's next.
Oh, that means the world to me. Thank you so much.
You can find her at Katie Nolan on Twitter. She will come into your mentions to defend you. She is indeed a very talented TV lady. Katie Nolan, I cannot thank you enough. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
After the break, Sports Illustrated senior writer Stephanie Apstein explains how the rest of us have more in common with Winter Olympians than we thought.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Stephanie. So we began our Olympics coverage with you telling us about the incredible backstory for now gold medal speed skater Aaron Jackson. And we end our Olympics coverage with something different, but definitely entertaining. As we record this, you are still in Beijing for the Winter Games. And the Winter Games, Stephanie, are cold. I did the research on this. Fact check true. Lots of ice and snow. And while the Olympics are over as people hear this, for many of our listeners, it is still winter and it is still cold out there, which is why what you found in talking to some Winter Olympians makes me like these athletes even more. It is something so relatable, but so unexpected. Stephanie, many of these Winter Olympians hate being cold.
They do. Actually, I started reporting this story because I hate being cold. And so I thought, like, there's got to be somebody who doesn't like this either.
It's such a great idea. And you open your story on this one part, which is very fun, with a scene from the luge track and an American named, and this is almost too good to be true, Summer Britcher. And Summer tells you that when she's at the top of the course, she's thinking about the race, but she's also thinking that in 45 seconds, I get to be warm again.
Yeah. Most of these athletes agree that you can't really feel the cold while you're competing. It's all the moments before and after. And so they all kind of look forward to, in her case, that minute, and in a lot of other cases, you know, the 7 seconds or whatever, when they can't really feel it.
Yeah, they're just like us. So Summer isn't alone. You found lots and lots of athletes who feel the same way. Ashley Caldwell comes into play here. She's an aerial skier. But explain to the listeners how she says she was tricked, and I'm using air quotes here, into competing in a winter sport.
Yeah, so when you first start, I don't know if people have watched aerial skiing and thought, how on earth do you even start doing that, as I did? There's a water ramp, and they do tricks into a swimming pool.
So we jump into a pool in the summertime, so it's warm. And then my first couple of jumps on snow, I was like, I don't know if I could do this.
Yeah.
Like, you get snow up your back, and it's so cold. I mean, I love the sport so much that you kind of, you just deal with the cold. It's like a necessary evil of doing a snow sport.
despite the fact that the snow was mostly man-made. It looks brutally cold in Beijing. What kind of conditions are some of these athletes dealing with?
They are brutal. Alex Pruitt was at aerials the other night and it was minus 11 Fahrenheit. The winds are so strong that they have postponed practices and competitions sometimes. It's really cold out there.
That sounds absolutely miserable. As you pointed out in your piece, you likened it. I loved this part. You likened it to walking your dog in February in a cold location. And like the only thing you're really thinking about is I hope the dog hurries up so we can go inside. That resonates with me. I have two dogs. I hated walking them in the cold. But I would imagine for these athletes, like that has to affect performance, right? Because the athletes have to be mentally strong and prepared to begin with just so they can get to the physical component of their sport.
Yeah, that's what Ashley Caldwell was saying, that it can be kind of dangerous and scary, actually, if you're too cold.
You're trying to be high performance and you can't. Like, that's also frustrating. You're like, oh my gosh, I used to do this really difficult task and I'm freezing.
Right.
Like, that's annoying. It makes it scarier.
Oh,
because if you're cold, you're like, you just want to go like bundle up and go inside and go into a hole.
Uh-huh.
And that's not a good mental space to go do a hard trick.
That makes sense.
So then you're like, oh my gosh, I can't really move the way I need to be like safe and productive.
Yeah. And Ashley Caldwell also brought up with you that the timing is so important because these athletes don't just start cold and then go into their sport. They have to warm up first, but they don't want to sweat either because then the sweat freezes and makes them colder once they actually start doing their competition.
Yeah, it's Ashley's given it a lot of thought, which I appreciate.
Making sure your socks don't get sweaty.
Okay.
Actually, I think that's your whole body. Making sure you don't get sweaty before you get outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Like, I don't put on my layers until I'm right about to go outside, or else like you get like sweaty and wet, and then you definitely freeze.
Right.
So that's been my like latest like trick is just making sure that sometimes I overdress, and that'll lead me to actually get colder than if I'm underdressed.
So it's a lot of trial and error for her over the years, but she says she thinks she's figured it out.
You spoke with an Australian figure skater named Brendan Carey. Australia, obviously not known for its ice and snow. He moves to Moscow in 2019 to work with a coach. He hates the snow. This part is hilarious too. Tell people what he does for 8 minutes at a time to feel sunlight.
He goes tanning. He says he doesn't care about his complexion. He's just desperate for some UV rays.
I understand the UV rays. Maybe heaters and blankets would be a little bit better though.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It seems to be working for him though. He's still living there.
So you mentioned, you know, the different things that Ashley had done. What other tricks do the Olympians who hate the winter and cold use to feel warm?
Yeah, lots of heated insoles, lots of boot warmers, hand warmers. There are a lot of sort of artificial options you can add. And then the other one is just flailing their limbs wildly, hoping the camera's not on them, trying to warm up. You can sometimes see the aerialists like flapping their hands around because they're just trying to get the blood moving.
Yeah, you got to keep the blood flow and move those feet. I love all of this. It really resonates for me because as somebody who grew up in Philadelphia and spent most of my time on the East Coast, I hate being cold. And I live in LA now, Stephanie, and it is considerably better. So at the very top, you said you hate being cold too. I'm interested in your feelings in relationship with the cold. Where do you live in the States and how do you navigate that?
So I live in New York City, which is not a great choice if you don't like being cold, but yeah. I grew up in Boston. I am a Northeasterner and I believe that the cold builds character and that you appreciate the summer because you endure the winter. And that is what I tell myself when it is 6 degrees and I have to go outside.
So reporters and photographers have to go through all this too. It's not just the athletes. You're there. You're dealing with all this. Josh Rosenblatt, our colleague, wrote a newsletter about how the photographers have to climb these incredibly steep, snowy, icy hills to get to their shots, and then they're skiing down. I think all of you guys should have hazard pay. Tell us what it's been like for you to be there and cover this and what it's been like for some of the other reporters and photographers.
Yeah, the photographers have the hardest gig for sure. I mean, truly, they ski to and from work. And if you are not a good skier, then you should probably get a different job, which is a crazy thing to say. And they're carrying all their gear too. So that
right.
They definitely win that award. We are enduring some of it. There's a lot more outdoor time than I might have hoped. A lot of the mixed zones where you talk to athletes are outdoors. So, you know, you can wait inside for part of it in the media workroom, but if you want to do any reporting, like the reason we came to China, you got to go outside. So I came equipped with a lot of hand warmers and toe warmers, which you stick to your socks. I'm a big fan of those. Mm-hmm. I got some of those heating pads that you're supposed to put on yourself if you have stomach cramps or a back injury or something. We put those on our kidneys and go stand outside. So all of that helps a little bit. I wear two hats, which I get laughed at for, and it's totally worth it. Two hats is the right number of hats. So I'm just pretty much decked out with winter gear. I feel like the kid in A Christmas Story who can't put his arms down? That's me every single day.
You're sewing your mittens to your coat just to make sure that you have them.
Exactly.
You know what? You're a consummate professional. I am absolutely in awe of you. You're doing incredible work over there under difficult conditions. How has the rest of this been for you? I mean, you're obviously dealing with a lot of work. You're in a different time zone. You're not getting a lot of sleep. You're dealing with the cold. What's the rest been like? I mean, is there time to exercise? Is there anything fun that you've done? Or do you just stay in your room when you're off and sleep and eat food served by robots?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's pretty limited. The most sort of outdoor exercise I've gotten recently, actually to tie it into the cold, was waiting at Ariel's to talk to athletes. I was running circles around the parking lot to try to stay warm. So we're pretty limited there.
Last one for you. Aside from all these things that are swirling around that make your job harder and colder, what else was memorable about covering these games for you? Is there a moment or an event or something that sticks out where you go, oh man, I'm going to remember that forever?
I mean, the robots have been very cool. They are not, I would say, any better than their human counterparts, which is kind of refreshing. Actually, I would have expected by now we would be on the verge of being overtaken by them. So it's good to know that I would still rather have a human chef and a human waiter, but it's sure. Cool to see them do it. It's very cool to see a robot mix a drink.
Well, you've done yeoman's work. You have definitely earned a break upon your return. I am cold just thinking about you out there doing that reporting, but I will say this, the interview warmed my heart. Stephanie Apstein, as always, thank you for this.
Thanks for having me.
You can read Stephanie's piece on SI.com. We'll link to it in our show notes. After the break, Sports Illustrated staff writer Emma Bacellari cracks a case involving baseball and Sex and the City.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help,
Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Emma Bacciolari is a staff writer for Sports Illustrated who covers Major League Baseball. But with MLB still in a lockout, Emma found herself filling some of her free time with a little TV. And what happens next involves Emma solving a mystery of her own making.
A few weeks ago, I found myself watching one of my favorite guilty pleasures as of late, the Sex and the City reboot, and just like that, when something struck my attention. There was baseball in the background of a scene. A baseball game that sounded suspiciously real. The character Steve was watching it when his wife Miranda came in to tell him that she wanted a divorce.
With two on and two out, runners at the corners, Gentry looks in for the sign, and the pitch, and that one is low, ball two. He missed that one as Baker had to pull it out of the dirt.
That sounds like real baseball. That level of detail, looking in for the sign, blocking the ball in the dirt. That doesn't sound like a fake game. Those are specific, evocative details that made me think of baseball. It sounded like a real game, even though I wasn't sure if the names checked out with any box score. I felt like I had to figure out where it came from, especially in the middle of a lockout where there were no real baseball games for me to watch. Instead, I went down the rabbit hole in search of this fake one.
Gentry looks in for the sign. And the pitch, and that one is low, ball two. He missed that one as Baker had to pull it out of the dirt.
I recognized the names. The pitcher was Gentry, which seemed like it could be Gary Gentry from the 1960s and 70s. Baker as a catcher, I wasn't sure about, but Baker, that's so common. I went to Baseball Reference and started looking for a game that could fit. Surely Gentry had pitched to a Baker as a catcher at least once. But I was wrong. Gentry had never pitched to a Baker, and neither had any other Gentry in Major League Baseball history, so this wasn't an MLB game. But I wasn't sure where else to look, because it sounded so clearly like it was one. I went through some other options. I thought about minor league games or college games, but I realized that's a fruitless search, so I should do the next best thing, which is post about this on Twitter and wait until someone with an IMDb Pro subscription DMs me and says, "Here's the contact information for one of the sound mixers." Which did happen. I took that contact info, I reached out, and thought, this will be easy. Surely this person will be able to tell me what exactly was going on here. The sound mixer gets back to me. He confirms that was fake audio that was made just for the show. But the sound department didn't make it. It had been outsourced to something called the Loop Group, which is the group that puts together all of the sound that loops in the background of a show or a movie. Perfect, I thought. I'll go talk to the Loop Group. But the next step was asking him who that Loop Group was, and he couldn't tell me. Because as it turns out, the world of Loop Groups can be kind of secretive. The first thing that came up when I Googled him was a headline that read, "The Mafia of the Acting World, Hollywood's Secret Loop Groups," from The Hollywood Reporter. Sometimes they were put together by the network, sometimes by the producers, sometimes by the sound department. And in this case, the sound mixer couldn't tell me who the Loop Group had been. Production was shut down, everyone was gone, and he told me that the trail was dead. I kept asking, sure that there had to be some answer here. But then he sent me the one-line email that should have shut it all down. "Sorry, Emma," it said, "the trail is officially dead." For a normal person, that probably would have been a sign to stop. For me, someone who was now passionately invested in this, it was a sign that I had to keep going until I found the answer. I realized I had to go deeper into the world of loop groups. I looked at some of the ones that were less secretive about their work and tried to figure out how they were usually credited. Sometimes they weren't credited at all, but sometimes they were, and that was my opening. In the credits of the Sex and the City reboot, there had been one line of additional vocal casting. That term sometimes showed up with loop groups, and it seemed like it might work here. I went back to the credits, I checked who was next to additional vocal casting, and the names were right there. Dan Fink and Bruce Winant. Bruce had a LinkedIn profile, and he had his email listed. An hour later, I was on the phone with Bruce.
Hello?
Hello, Emma. This is Bruce Winant calling.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
He's been in the business for more than 30 years.
Dan and I are actors, and we met doing Les Miserables in Los Angeles, the original L.A. company, and just kind of had this looping stuff as a fun little side hustle. Over the last 7-8 years, the looping pretty much takes up all our time now.
And this was just one of the many fake baseball games he's done. He's been asked to do hockey, football, horse racing, and more, including soccer and Spanish, although that one he had to outsource. And his work goes way beyond fake sports. As part of a loop group, he's responsible for all of the background noise in a show or film. Every single show involves this. Any sound with background noise is going to be added by a loop group. That means a scene in a restaurant where you have diners at another table, you have the waitresses, you have all of that sound going on in the background. That's all added in after the fact, and it's added in by people like Bruce. While he does all of that background noise, one of his favorite things to do are sports, and he enjoys baseball in particular.
I'm a big sports fan, so I do a lot of our play-by-play stuff. I listen to a lot of it. I understand the cadence. I go online, and I'll find a game that fits what we're looking for. I'll listen to it to get the flavor, and then write my own version of it.
It was clear from that little clip of Sex and the City that he spoke the language. The game had sounded like it could be real. It wasn't just the information, but it was the cadence, the rhythm he was speaking in. It sounded like a real broadcast, and that's something he takes pride in.
I thought it was fascinating when I got your email. I just thought, oh, cool. Someone like you, who obviously knows sports very well, our hope is that it sounds real and authentic. Get the feedback that it did, you know, that's a big compliment. And that's what we go for, so that the people who do know and it does catch their ear won't go, what? What did he say? No.
Baseball has a long relationship with being background noise. It's perfect for the radio, it grew alongside the medium, and it shines as something that keeps time in the background. Here, it was explicitly background noise. But that shared language was common with Bruce and with me and with Steve in Sex and the City, asked to turn down the game.
It's fun to put those games together because it's like, oh, this is the kind of game I'd like to see.
And as I listened to him talk about the process, I realized it was a game that I would like to see too.
You can read Emma Bacellari's piece on SI.com. We'll link to it in our show notes. Sports Illustrated Weekly is a production of Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. And for more of Sports Illustrated's best stories and podcasts, visit SI.com. This episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly was produced by Alex Kappelman, Cooper McKim, and Isaac Lee, who is also our sound engineer. Our senior producer is Dan Bloom. Our executive producers are Scott Brody and me, John Gonzalez. Our theme song is by Nolan Schneider. Thanks for listening, and if you've stuck around this long, we leave you with this.
But anyway, back to whatever we were talking. Stop licking my feet. It's so weird. Sorry, it's my boyfriend. He's here and just, no, I'm kidding. It's Myrtle.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.